Welcome to Last Games Night on Earth, a podcast where we discuss if you were given just one last games night, what would you wish for? My name is James, and this is the Dungeons & Flagons podcast.
Do you have a standard intro, do you?
Just kind of say, hello, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, it's...
Did you like how I did that?
Yeah, it's as good a way as any to start a podcast, I find.
We've got Lewis with us today. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, I'm Lewis. As James mentioned, I have nothing to do with board games except for being a fan. So I'm not going to be the most enlightening guest in terms of getting on kind of industry professionals.
We used to run events together.
We did.
You were part of the start of my events career, which eventually led to Dungeons & Flagons.
It did.
Which eventually led to me being furloughed, which eventually led to this podcast. Really?
Yeah.
You're to blame for this podcast.
Hell yeah. I'll take full responsibility for this podcast. No, man. I'm always happy to get involved with pretty much anything you do.
Thanks.
I can't remember why I was in Manchester last time when I came to Dungeons & Flagons. I think I came to go to Dungeons & Flagons.
Yeah, I think you did, yeah.
I came to see you and do Dungeons & Flagons, and I was...
And your friend Josh was there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I bought Josh, and then he became like a big-time Dungeons & Flagons fan, because he was working in Manchester, but then he stopped working in Manchester, and then coronavirus, so...
Yeah, me and Lewis used to run a heavy metal festival together, along with Chunk and Laura.
Still got it. I couldn't find the t-shirt today. I've worn it recently, and I think it's just in the wash somewhere.
I've got about 8 of them. I don't know how I've ended up with so many. They just keep appearing. But yeah, you did hear that right, listeners. I used to run a heavy metal festival.
You were the least metal fan there, which was fucking hilarious.
Yeah, but I had the keys to the alcohol, so...
You were the booze master.
My events career has gone from a heavy metal festival to board games.
Both sat here drinking water on a Saturday night. I haven't drank since beginning of last year. I quit drinking last year.
Oh, nice one. Well done, man.
Yeah, I've been just about sober for just over a year now.
Incredible. Well done.
I had like a couple of beers over Christmas, and I've had a couple of beers over Christmas.
I've been drinking a lot less. I find it turns out that sitting in the flat getting drunk isn't that fun.
I think it's the adventure of kind of the shit we used to do when we were drinking that made it fun, rather than the actually being drunk. Who knew?
Definitely.
Who knew it was the alcohol that was accelerating the situation, and not the situation that was making the situation made the alcohol better. The alcohol didn't make the situation better. There we go. That's a nice profound opening for you.
It's just that, and then cut to. All right, so what have we covered so far?
Who I am and how we know each other.
All right, so you're here to talk about your dream games night.
Yeah, the last games night on Earth.
Where do you want to start?
I'm always happy to start with food. So I was thinking, I was thinking about it a little bit actually, and I was trying to figure out if I wanted to go full min-max and think of food that would A, make me better at board games, and B, be better to eat around board games. And I decided just to kind of sack it off, to be honest. I was like, no, what would I actually want to eat at board game night? Or
I thought you meant, oh, then I sacked it off and I couldn't be bothered thinking about it.
No, I decided that I was taking it too seriously, and that I just shouldn't bother being that much of a fucking nerd about something as simple as choosing a fucking meal.
It is your last games night on Earth, though. Some would say that you should take it a bit seriously. Did you not read the contract?
No.
This actually happens.
I've read the contract. So it's basically if an apocalypse situation happens, then the contract is kind of brought about, and we have to fulfill the obligation. So with that in mind, I'm thinking of trying to make something as complicated as possible for you to try and cook me.
Okay.
Although there's nothing in there that stipulates that it would be you that eats it, that cooks it. I'm just adding that in myself.
That's totally fine. If your dream is for... I mean, you must have seen some of my meals, because I'm a good cook.
to be fair, we were having the conversation before that I've never tried lobster, so maybe that's my board game. My board game night is cracking open a lobster.
What if it turned out that you hated it though?
Oh, that'd be like the starter.
We'd
start with like, I'm going to say like lobster thermidor, because it's the only thing that I actually know that has lobster in it.
This came up in an episode a couple of weeks ago. I love lobster. And I don't know what lobster thermidor is.
French dish consisting of a creamy mixture of cooked lobster, egg yolks and brandy stuffed into a lobster shell. It can be served with oven browned cheese crust, typically grey and... I'm not going to try and pronounce that. It sounds like... Yes. You know when you... Have you ever had a mashed potato that you've scooped all the mashed potato out and then like mash it with cheese and then... a baked potato. Take all the potato out and you mash it with cheese and then put the cheesy potato you mix back into the potato skin.
I just like chips.
Yeah, lobster thermidor is like the like upper class version of hollowing out a baked potato and stuffing the potato back into it afterwards when it's got some cheese and garlic in it.
Oh, I'm such white trash. I just like me lobster too. With lots of butter, lots of garlic, a bit of parsley.
I don't think you can actually eat lobster white trash. I think that's a kind of given.
I don't know. What about those like American restaurants? Where it's like, all you can eat lobster, and you get given that like plastic bib.
Is it lobster though, or is it like, is it shrimp? Is it like bubblegum shrimp?
It's called like red lobster, isn't it?
Ah, okay, yeah. So
hello.
Just see lobster as a completely like bougie thing, and I disassociate it with. We'll cover it briefly. How did you end up buying live lobster? Like, what was the situation that you went, can I have two lobster, and you got handed two wiggling, moving lobsters, and you didn't go, excuse me, can you kill these first?
Well, they don't. So we went. Obviously, it's Valentine's Day tomorrow, so I decided. Usually, we wouldn't really do much, but because I mean, we haven't got anything else to do, so
yeah.
But sod it. So I went down to the. Rode my bike into town. Went to the fishmonger, and got two lobsters. But I thought it was a choice between raw lobster and cooked lobster, and I thought, oh, well, I'll get raw lobster. It'll be nice and fresh. So I asked for two lobster. She picked it up, and then as she was putting it into the box, I noticed that they were crawling. At that point, I was just a bit too awkward to kind of be like, oh, no, actually.
See, I know exactly what you mean. It's that anxiety thing of like, oh, wait, but if I tell them now, if I'm like, oh, actually, can I have the dead ones? They'll realise I'm not supposed to be here. I don't usually eat lobster, and they'll know. And they won't tell me the lobster because they'll know that I'm not supposed to have lobster because I don't deserve lobster. That's why my brain just freaking stuck. Like, I did it at the butchers when I first started going to the butchers all the time. I'd ask for something, and I'd be like, oh, wait, no, shit, I don't want that one. But if I correct him, he'll know that I'm not supposed to be here.
It's going to like artisan shops. I hate it. I absolutely hate it. But I love it. I love the stuff.
We're scum.
Like, there's a cheese shop down the road from me, and it's terrifying because I want the cheese. But whenever I go in, they're like, what do you want? And I'm like, cheese. I'm like, yeah, no shit. You're in a cheese shop. What cheese? And I'm like, can you tell me that?
Delicious cheese. I want the delicious cheese, please.
So what I've found is the way to do it is you walk in, you know, pretending to be all suave and sophisticated and confident. You go, is there anything that you would recommend? And then they're like, this guy's in the know. But more often than not, I end up walking away with something that smells very weird.
My quick anxiety tips for this one is... plan it 3 days in advance and furiously Google it. I don't think they give a fuck as much as I give a fuck about it. That's the problem.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I don't think they're thinking like, look at this fucking low life coming in and asking for a steak and not what it means.
We're walking out like filled with anxiety going, oh my God, I just made an absolute fool of myself. And they're just thinking, a nice chap.
All they're thinking is, oh, another... like, so you know when you're working at the bar, and you're like, oh, another customer who just doesn't know how to order fast enough, and I'm now like wasting my time waiting for him to order a fucking Foster's.
Yeah, see, maybe that's why I'm so full of anxiety, because it's like when people come to the bar and go, can I have a rum? I'm like, which one?
Yeah.
There's like 18 different types of rum. You know what? You're you're getting coconut rum.
So when I walk in and I'm like, can I have a steak? And I'm like, well, what, which one? I'm like, and what I'm trying to say is the one that's not too expensive. It says, actually, can I have, oh, what rum have you got? And I don't actually know what any of these rums are. I'm just trying to figure out which one sounds the least, which one do I recognize that doesn't sound like it's like £7 a shot. So in conclusion, I'd start with lobster. I'd have steak.
What cut of steak?
I don't know. Well, if we're doing this whole, like, it's the last night on earth, I'm going to get a tomahawk. I'm assuming it's a really good cut of meat. I've never had one. So yeah, I'm going to go for lobster. I'm trying to think what dessert. It'd be a tiramisu, wouldn't it? I just can't go wrong with a tiramisu.
There's too many things going on in a tiramisu for me.
Can you tell that I'm hungry? I'm not eating before this. I put the kids to bed and I've come straight on here and I'm not eating, and now I'm like, so we have lobster and a steak tiramisu. let's have six more courses. Fuck it.
What about drinks? What are we having? What are you having for drinks?
See, this is where it depends on the situation. If it's the last night on earth, I'm getting shit faced. Mm. Yeah, it doesn't matter if you die sober. Like, I'd probably be drinking. I'd be different beers. You know me. I like my craft beers. So it's what I'm missing the most. I've started looking for non-alcoholic craft beers, which actually there's a pretty good market for.
Yeah.
So I'd definitely go boozy.
Cool.
If it's not the actual last day on earth, then I'd go for my like trying non-alcoholic. I'd have the tiny rebel oat milk porter in it. It's disgusting. Fuck it. Give me water.
And where's your location? Where are you having it?
Depends on the type of apocalypse again. If it's an asteroid crash, I want a table that's going to overlook the impact site. I'm just playing the board game as the fucking bombs drop.
So you want a viewing platform for the apocalypse?
Yeah.
You're taking the whole last night on Earth very seriously.
Yeah, I think my brain's kind of gone. I think given the last year with the global pandemic and just the apocalypse-y feel to it all, I think I'm just leaning into it.
For the first episode of the podcast, the pilot, I kind of came away from it deciding that we took the whole, like, you've arrived at the pearly gates and you've met Death and he's given you one last games night thing a bit too seriously, and we ended up talking about Death a bit too much. So after that, I kind of steered it away from that, and you've just gone full circle and gone, I'm going to kill everyone.
I mean, I'm not doing the killing. I'll note that. I am merely a witness / victim.
All right, so you want a viewing platform for the apocalypse?
Yeah, I mean, if we're going the non-apocalypse route, it'd be board game cafe like Dungeons and Flagons, or the boardroom in Hull, which is fucking amazing venue, which I miss dearly. But yeah, no, I always prefer playing either at my house with mates, where you're kind of in control and it's a safe environment, and you can just kind of be yourself and don't have to worry too much about outside forces, or somewhere like Dungeons and Flagons or the boardroom. That's kind of my two preferred environments.
Fair enough.
Just somewhere with friends. Just friends. remember them.
Do you play many games online?
I've done it a few times. So I got Catan and played that a little bit. And I've got Tabletop Simulator anyway, because I used it for playing 40K with some friends who live in America and in Finland. So I tried played some like weird obscure board game I never actually heard of, and it was fine. It was okay.
Yeah, I fucking hate it.
Yeah.
It's either too fiddly, or there's not enough like interaction. Mm. You're just staring at a screen playing a game with somebody who could just be a computer. Yeah. Or it's just awkward and not, like, I don't like D&D online. Like, I just miss having people around the table.
I'm okay with D&D online because I'm used to it. Like, I started playing D&D kind of way back when, but then when kind of Roll20 came out and stuff, and it was getting easier to play online, a lot of the friends again in America, in Finland and stuff, I played with them. So I probably played more Roll20 D&D than I have table there. It's about, at this point, it's 50-50. Because I played for a year before the pandemic every week, and then I played a year every week in the pandemic, but then I played a little bit. Yes, it's probably 50-50. I think the main point that fails is communicating via things like Discord, because it's the whole visual cues of knowing when someone wants to talk and seeing someone do something, and you know, even things like role playing when you're doing subtle body language cues, and you know, just pulling fucking faces. I never thought I'd miss pulling a face at someone.
But conversations just don't seem to flow as smoothly, because you don't want to talk over, you know, when you're around a table, you kind of know, it's a lot easier to kind of like find ways to kind of put something in, like
whisper, nudge,
yeah,
and pass it over. It's all well and good kind of private messaging on Discord, but then a lot of the time I'll have Discord full screen on one screen with people's faces on, and then I'll have all my D&D stuff on the other screen. I'm not always looking at other people, so if someone's trying to get my attention, yeah, it falls flat. It's all right, but it falls flat. Online board games suffer the same fate. Even if the mechanics are good, it falls flat with the lack of human interaction. So,
yeah, well, it's the reason why I like board games, really, is the human element of it. Mm-hmm. There's a reason I play video games every now and again.
Yeah.
I prefer board games because of the...
Yeah, I wonder where that kind of sits as well. I wonder how many people... So I'm more of a video game guy. Like, video games has always been my jam, and board games are kind of an extension of that. It's the board games is my extra, like, oh yeah. But whereas I wonder how many people are more like you in terms of board games is their jam and video games is, yeah, their extra. Because there must be a lot of people. I must know a few people at least that are like, nah, it's 50-50.
Just an analog boy in a digital age. I mean, we've already started talking about games, so should we move on to games?
Yeah.
What are you playing first?
I'm going to open with a six-hour game of Twilight Struggle.
All right.
So Twilight Struggle is a two-player...
You're going to have to try and sell this to me, because it's number 10 on BGG at the minute, and it just doesn't appeal to me at all.
Honestly, it is a hard sell. It's... It's mental. Like, it's probably like there's only one game that I can think of that's as complicated or more complicated or just as slow and as like grindy. And I can't even remember the name of it, but my housemate who had this game also had that game. And it was like you've got like 9 boards and like you've got, I don't know what it's called now, I'll find out. But Twilight Struggle is a 2-player game. One of you plays as the US and one of you plays as the USSR. Or just like blue and red. You don't take as the US, you play as NATO. And you just reenact the Cold War. And it's really historically accurate. It has loads of historical details. The actual gameplay itself, the mechanics are quite straightforward. It's basically kind of a card game. And yeah, you kind of go along and you do bits and pieces, and then you'll trigger an event that will be like the Cuba Missile Crisis, and you'll have to play through that event, and that will escalate or de-escalate the DEFCON level. And it's just it's quite a grim game, because obviously you're reenacting the Cold War, but you're in it for about, I think the first game it's about 6 hours. That's 6 hours of playing the same board game. And I can't think of anything better. It was just a full day.
Is the Cold War like a period of time that you're particularly interested in? Is that what makes the game so fun for you, like the theme?
Yeah, potentially. I think that's probably it. I think it's because it's a game about history and about a really like just a bit of a mental period of history. You know, there's a whole section of like the Vietnam War, like, because the Vietnam War is happening, and if you're playing as the USSR, it's even funnier because you're not even taking part in it. You're just supplying the communists. You're just supplying Vietnam. And yeah, it's that kind of, it's the same reason I play like Total War games. It's that alternative history. you're playing a historical game. I play Hearts of Iron as well, which again is World War II, but it's like, what would happen if this had happened? So like Hearts of Iron, what would have happened if Britain would have been taken over by Mosley and it was a fascist state and it joined the Axis? Yeah. What would happen if America didn't actually join World War II, or Japan didn't bomb Pearl Harbor, or, you know, it's that thing of like history, but, so it's like, could I, as the USSR, win the Cold War? Could the US, you know, outright destroy the USSR much sooner? It's, you know, it's that kind of like historical what-if-ery that probably gives it the greater appeal. But as well, it's just a really interesting board game. It's not really played anything like it. There's probably going to be someone out there that listens to this that knows board games a lot more than me. It'll go, oh no, it's just a rehash of this. I mean, I know that it's similar to We the People and Hannibal, Rome versus Carthage. But that's mainly because Board Game Geek tells me so, unless because I know. Yeah, so that's kind of my first one, because, you know, get the 6-hour game out of the way first.
Straight into the deep end.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine trying to finish. I'm thinking again quite logically in that you're not going to have much energy to play anything else after playing. I think if you start and play two, you know, if you play two other games and then you start playing Twilight Struggle, you're not going to finish.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I like to start with like quick little like 10-minute game just to get everyone in the mood, and then go into the big one and then finish on something lighter.
Yeah, so. I mean, that's probably much more straightforward. I mean, looking at Board Game Geek now, the common playing time is 120 to 180 minutes. So that 6-hour game is definitely us like not knowing the rules properly. And I mean, this was back when I was living in my student dig, so I was probably drunk and stoned the entire time. So it won't have helped. But it does have a 3.59 out of 5 complexity rating. So again, not the most complex, but definitely complex enough to be.
I don't believe any of it. The complexity rating on BGG, I tend to just ignore. I don't believe it a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, it's a ticket to rise of 1.85 out of 5, and that, yeah. That kind of brings me into the next one. I mean, Ticket to Ride would be my another game that I'd play. I don't know if I'd play this one second or last. I think actually it's quite a good palate cleanser after Ticket to Ride.
Pickled ginger of board games.
It is. It's just so fucking easy. Every time I played it, there's always been at least one or two people that didn't know what the game was about or how to play it. And every time, by the end, everyone is fully involved and everyone knows what's going on and everyone has figured it out.
It is so easy to teach.
The weird fact thing that I learned is that as Ticket to Ride, you're not building railroads. You're collecting the tickets that you've traveled on.
Yeah.
So every time you build a train line, you're actually like mapping where you've been rather than physically building the train line.
Yeah.
Gives it a completely different element. It's a lot more like around the world in 80 days, like madcapped, like rich people doing things for the sake of doing things, like trying to get the.
Yeah, I think it says in the rule book that you're like, it's like a bet to travel as much of America as possible, from what I remember.
And I remember reading that and being like, oh shit, that makes so much more sense. So it's called Ticket to Ride, not like, and not something to do with building railroads. but yeah, it's just such a lovely game. It's.
I really enjoy it. I don't play it as much nowadays because I have played it quite a lot. Yeah. Have you played one of the new ones? I think it's London and New York.
No, I've only played the core version.
Yeah, it's basically the core version. So it hasn't got any of the like fancy rules that like Rails and Sails and some of the others have introduced. But basically, they've just slimmed it all down into a 15-minute game, and I quite enjoy it. It's just like, you know, you whack it out, set it up in seconds, play Ticket to Ride for 15 minutes, and then pack it away. I quite like that.
Yeah, it's a good palate cleanser. It's a bit like Dobble. You can get a tin of Dobble out and just, right, we're going to play this one, and then just play it for 10 minutes. It was really good, like, pre-drink game back when we were allowed out and drank.
Mm.
Yeah, it was like, we play this. Just to get everyone kind of.
So, it's the second third of a game. and you've got the choice to pick up destination cards. Are you the kind of player that takes one?
I think because typically, so my thinking behind it is usually, if I don't get this, I get fined. So I lose points if I don't get it. It depends entirely on what the state of the board is. If not a lot of people have got like really major routes, I'll think about it. I don't usually do it though, because I get really fucking anxious about winning. Like I love winning and I hate losing.
So I feel like I've lost so many times that I'm just like, I'm gonna risk it.
Mm.
You never know.
If I'm doing well, not a fucking chance. Like if I'm doing well, I won't gamble it. But if I'm losing, if I think I'm gonna lose, I might as well lose in style, and I'll try it again, and I'll go for it. But I probably win more games of Ticket to Ride than I have done any other board game. I don't know if it's because of just frequency of playing it, or if it's just because I'm lucky, or if I've just got some kind of weird.
Have you got a strategy that you go for every time?
Not really. I think it tends to be more of a, I think it's everyone's, isn't it? You try and be a bit sneaky and don't give away exactly what you're doing. I tend to go for a lot of small objectives and then save up for some really big ones. I don't like not having anything on the board like 5 or 6 turns in. I like to have a couple of like 2s and 3s down just so that I've got something there. And also, I find it's really good for blocking other people if you just get some of the smaller ones.
Oh, you're a blocker, are you?
Yeah, I'm a bit cruel with it. I'd rather win by other people not being able to win.
Oh, there's nothing worse than an aggressive TTR player.
I know, and I hate myself.
You've taken something so nice and genteel.
I know. I turn it really cutthroat. I can usually keep myself lighthearted enough to not be like hyper aggressive, but usually it's there. If you dig deep enough, there's the aggression's there. It's bubbling under the surface. one wrong move and that's it. I'm exploding. I'm flipping that table. Like, you know, if someone takes my big destination, that's it. I'm out. Like, east to west coast taken. Not a chance, mate. I'm out. Like, I'm flipping that table. I'm walking. Nah, I don't think.
What's your favourite memory from a game of Ticket to Ride?
Playing it at Dungeons and Dragons. I think it was actually the first time I played it. Yeah, well, I was there with Josh, and I think we got there and we're like, I don't really know what to play because there's so many to play. And you're like, well, what do you take a chance on? And I was like, I love Catan. I'll always play it. But I was like, I want to try something new. I want to play a game I've not played before. And I was like, well, look at the list. I was like, right, I'm not a huge board game guy. Like, I think on the scale of 1 to 10, I think 1 being I played Monopoly at Christmas with my family, and 10 being you. I'm probably like maybe a 3 or a 4. I'm on definitely on the lower end. I can talk the talk. I'll definitely sit there and talk about board games for hours, but I've not played as many as it probably sounds like I have sometimes. I appreciate them, I like them, and I love playing them, but I haven't played as many as I want to.
There's two ways of looking at that. It's, you know, there's people who find board games that they like and will play it over and over and over again. And there's other people who like just have played hundreds and hundreds of games, but if they're honest about it, probably only played them once or twice.
Hmm.
It doesn't make you any less of a board gamer, in my eyes. Yeah.
No, absolutely not. And especially with places like Dungeons and Dragons and the Boardroom, near the Avenue Hall. It's around any locals. I think because, especially before there were places like board game cafes that were more more popular, and before there was Dungeons and Dragons, and you know, if you're looking for a board game that you want to take a gamble on, you can be spending 50 to 100 quid on a board game.
You might
fucking hate it. So I think I've never really had the capital to be able to risk playing a board game. So the board games that I have owned and that I've kind of my housemates have owned, I've played the shit out of them. But if I've not got access to them, I won't touch them, because I just haven't. I've never had the money to go, yeah, I can afford to spend £60 on this board game, and if it's shit, I'll just not play it again.
Yeah, no, so, definitely, I get that. We get a lot of people at Dungeons and Flagons who are basically just, you know, they want to pay £2 and try games before they buy.
Exactly.
What's your last game?
So I've mentioned it a few times, but it's got to be Catan. Specifically, Star Trek Catan.
Why the Star Trek one specifically?
I've just got incredible memories of it. So it was the version...
Game or or Star Trek?
Oh, the game. I mean, both. Right. Both kind of, but the game especially. So when I lived with my housemates in Leeds, we had Catan, but we only had Star Trek Catan, and we played the shit out of it. Whenever we were all sat in the same room, not really doing anything, which was most of the time, it'd always be, we'd be sat there and be like watching something, or just whenever we got like, you know, a 3 out of 10 board, we'd be like, Catan? Yeah. And it was just always on the table. It was always one suggestion away from being played. And it was any time, like everyone's got home from work, we've had a couple of drinks or a couple of smokes or whatever. It's a Saturday morning, Catan. It's a Sunday night, everyone's tired and looking forward to, you know, Sunday morning, everyone's hungover. Any time at all, it was always just a Catan. But the only version we had was a Star Trek one. And it was silly things, like So rather than calling it like fuel, it was always space dinner and space petrol and and space metal, rather than, you know, so it was rather than being like, oh, can I trade you 2 deuterium for food? It's like, I'll trade you 2 space petrols for a space dinner. And we were all like Star Trek fans anyway, like, so it was always semi-relevant, and it was just a bit silly. Like, it was the silliest version of Catan I think you can have is the Star Trek version.
I was going to ask, like, do you not miss the fun puns with Catan? Like, we've all said, has anybody got wood for sheep?
No, because then you get to do space petrol and space dinner. And then there's always we used to always laugh because we were like, so, bit of Star Trek lore for you. It's a post-scarcity world, so there's no actual demand for anything because everything's kind of produced so well. So like, food is made in replicators. So the idea that you're trading virtual food for actual like rocket ship fuel was always just like completely absurd to us, and that's what kind of made it so funny. Was like, oh, I've got too much food, and you're like, yeah, well, that's the post-scarcity society for you. It was just like, and whenever the robber was a Klingon ship, and so it was just endless Worf quotes. Whenever someone was like, put the robber on you, you'd be like, shut up, Worf.
Nerdy Star Trek humor is a very specific type of humor.
Oh, it's niche. Every time, shut up, Wesley. Like, all the time, just from nowhere, just shut up, Wesley. And there's like a unwritten rule that if you were playing Catan, there were 3 sofas in this front room, and there was there was obviously the dining room, like the table. It was like a big coffee table, a really big one. There'd always be someone sat on like a kitchen chair, and if you've ever seen it before, so Commander Riker from Next Generation sits on chairs really weird. He like swings his leg over the chair and sits down, and if he gets off, he sometimes swings his leg back over the chair and walks away. So it was this weird, like, in-joke we had that if you sat on that chair and you went to get a drink, went for a piss, you'd had to stand up like Riker. And there were times where, like, people have decked it trying to fucking get over this chair and, like, wiping the game out. Flipping over a chair, because, of course, you're fucking, like, drunk and stuff. And, yeah, just some really, really, really fond memories of just being wankered. Like, we'd get back from nights out and we'd be sat there, like, you know, everyone's drunk and laughing and like, if we play Catan, and that was it. Like, as soon as it was suggested, oh, what's Catan? Ah, oh, fucking hell, introduce it to bringing someone else into the fold, and yeah, trying to drunkenly explain the rules of Catan. Ah, oh, yeah, it was just just really, really good memories.
I love hearing people's like memories like that about like board games and stuff.
From the before times.
Should we go on to guess who you invite in to your last games night on Earth?
I mean, depressingly, just friends. Just,
I don't think that's depressing.
No, I think it's more of just like the context of being in the middle of the pandemic and like God knows where we are in this third lockdown, and I've just not been seeing my friends for so fucking long that the idea of just going to my friend's house and playing a board game is bliss.
Yeah.
There aren't really any celebrities or historical figures that I'd really, I mean, if we go in celebrities, it'd be someone like Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, you know, the people that I think would kind of appreciate it. Like, I'd love to play like something like Catan with Bill Bailey. I can't imagine anything better than playing Star Trek Catan with Bill Bailey.
Bill Bailey's come up twice now in Last Games Night on Earth.
I think it's because he seems like someone who'd appreciate them a bit as well. It's not just
we were saying it'd be awesome to play D&D with him as like a bard.
Yes. You could say about his historical figures or celebrities about, oh yeah, I'd love to play a board game with, I don't know, insert random celebrity. But if they don't think they'd enjoy it or get anything out of it or be good at it, then what's really the point? Whereas someone like Bill Bailey or Nick Frost and Simon Pegg and just anyone that's kind of nerdy like Matt Mercer. I think who else is a secret nerd? Henry Cavill.
Zoe chose Henry Cavill for our Valentine's Day special date night games night instead of me.
But to be fair, mate, like, if you're giving her that choice,
yeah, I don't know, I get it.
if you're giving her that choice, you've got to accept the loss on that one. No, but it would definitely just be,
mate. Like I say, it's your games night. If you just want to invite your mates, then that's the correct answer.
Yeah, just get me to Dungeons and Flagons with some friends, and let's just sit around and enjoy being within 2 meters of people. Which, ironically, something I hated before the pandemic.
I know, right?
Yeah. I hated people being close to me, and now I'm like, come closer. stand close to me on a bus. Give me a fucking crowd of people at a gig any day. Holy shit. I've not been to see live music now for over a year, and it's just, my body's crippled by it.
I can't wait for it to not be inappropriate, but also a normal reaction to somebody standing to you too close in the supermarket, so you jump. Not like standing licking distance, but just like
there's
reaching for the same thing at the shelf, and you'd like do a backflip defensively.
Yeah, going to full ninja stance, like,
yeah.
Crouching tiger. I just miss people, I think.
Hmm.
Especially like just going to friends' houses and just not fucking doing anything.
It will get better. So, is there anything else you'd like to add to make it your dream games night?
No, just good friends, good games, good food. I think I'd like you in a full waiter's outfit. Bringing
you want me serving you?
Lobster. Oh, hell yeah.
A, B, C, D.
Okay. B.
You got a joke.
Okay. All right, you're telling it. I was like, shit, please don't. Please don't make me tell a joke.
Oh, God. That bloke on Thunderbirds asks a lot of questions, doesn't he? He's a right nosy Parker.
Wow. Discord, like, background noise suppressioned my deep sigh. There was a long pause, and the entire time was just a inhale and an exhale.
Oh, well, on that absolutely horrendous note, have you got anything you'd like to plug?
No, not particularly. I mean, I've mentioned Boardroom a few times. I think the overall message is just, when this all does finish, get out to your local game stores, go and spend and buy local. Don't buy things from fucking Amazon anymore. Just go and buy them from your local shops. Go to fucking Traveling Man and put money in their coffers. They're the ones that need it now, not fucking Jeff Bezos and his legion of corporate greed bags.
Great message. Or if you're in Manchester, fanboy free.
Yeah, exactly. Traveling man in Leeds and York. And
they've got a traveling man in Manchester as well.
I've got one in Manchester. Yeah, just get down to your local places and just show them that we missed them.
And support your local board game events when they're back on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a fucking travel to Manchester. Fuck it. Just everyone gets to Manchester. Let's just pack out the flower and flagon.
Yeah, let's do it.
We're used to queuing by now with all these fucking queuing for supermarkets and shit. Let's queue outside Dungeons and Flagons for a 15-minute game to get to ride.
Oh, I hope so. Right, well, thank you very much for joining us, Lewis. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did. It was great.
Thanks, run for your last Games Night on Earth one last time.
Yeah, it's good.
So, snacks, we're having lobster for starter.
Yeah, lobster starter, tomahawk steak.
Dessert was a tiramisu. Drinks, just nice beer, or if you're trying not to drink, non-alcoholic ale. Location was either just a friend's house or a platform from which to watch the world burn. Your games were Ticket to Ride, Twilight Struggle, and Catan Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds really nice and wholesome. I think it's what we all really want deep down at the minute.
Yeah. Oh, how times have changed. Imagine if we'd done this two or three years ago, or even before kids. Imagine what that happened. It'd be completely different.
Yeah.
We'd be in person and we'd be wasted. 3 hour recording and 25 minutes of usable content. All it would be is just me screaming Catan for 10 minutes.
Oh, God. Thank you very much, Lewis. And again, I hope you enjoyed joining us today.
Yeah, cheers, James. That was fantastic. I really enjoyed it. Thanks.
Play the outro.
Punch it, Chewy.
As always, thank you so much for listening. If you want to get in touch with us about anything at all, find us on social media with @LGNOEpodcast or email us at lastgamesnightonearth@outlook.com. If you enjoyed it, please consider telling at least one person. It's the best way to help spread podcasts. And if you want to help support Dungeons & Flagons' events in the future and keep the podcast going, check out our Patreon by searching Dungeons & Flagons. I've been James, and this has been Last Games Nights on Earth, a podcast by Dungeons & Flagons. Thank you.